Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Hi, and welcome to Momentum Magnet. Today, we want to talk about the challenging topic of overcoming obstacles. I don't know about you, but this year has felt like a constant journey of lessons about how to survive the challenges and curveballs we're all being thrown. It really came up for me in the last couple of weeks that some people seem to have a proverbial set of circumstances that almost feel unfair. And I started thinking about and asking myself the questions about why. And how are some people able to continuously overcome things that pop up, bad news, life challenges? And it led me to really think about a guest that could exemplify what it is to be the type A survivor, who could join us and really talk to us about how to keep that mindset of overcoming no matter what you've been thrown. And today's guest does that. Her name is Julia Becker Collins. She's the COO of Vision Advertising. She is an endurance athlete. I mean, not just someone who runs a 5K, but someone who throws themselves up mountains over obstacles for hours on end. And she does that after saying that she's not a self-proclaimed athlete of any sort. In fact, she used to, just 5 or 6 years ago, feel more comfortable in yoga pants with a glass of wine. And this year during COVID, she received a thyroid cancer diagnosis. And now she's on a new journey of being a survivor, only that it's not her first run at a medical condition. So with Julia here as our guest, I think everybody will be able to leave this episode with a better understanding of what do you do when life throws you a curveball? How do you keep that mindset of a champion no matter what is thrown your way? And what are some of the tips and tricks she has learned on how you can support someone in your life going through a hard time, or how you can show up for yourself when life makes it a necessity? So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Julia. Hey, girl.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to have this conversation.
So am I. I mean, it has been really fun prepping for this episode because just your backstory of being an endurance athlete has led me down this crazy rabbit hole of documentaries about the sport. I have watched more people run in 50 degree below zero than I ever thought people actually did. But I credit that to you. And what has been really amazing and what I'm really excited for people to get out of this episode today is that it sort of lit a fire in me. After speaking with you earlier this week and prepping for this episode, I really looked at myself and said, you know, it takes a great deal. You have to change, and to change, you have to become uncomfortable. And I think a lot of us forget that in the most beneficial seasons of our lives, when we really push ourselves to do something new, it requires a colossal amount of effort, and it gets uncomfortable. So Given that you're the queen of big changes, I thought maybe you could introduce yourself a little bit and talk about, you know, your professional career as, you know, a female leader in advertising, a little bit about your endurance athlete, and then we can, you know, get into some of the medical challenges that you've also faced this year.
Absolutely. Like you said, up until 5 or 6 years ago, I really was not doing any kind of athletic endeavors whatsoever. You know, I used to make jokes that my bicep curls were taking the glass of wine from the coffee table to my mouth, right? And that's wine is delicious and I'm not going to knock wine, but that was not really a bicep curl. And I really didn't get raised in an athletic family. I don't have any kind of athletic background. I didn't play organized sports as a kid. There's nothing, you know, there to trigger me. But I've always been somebody who's incredibly determined. I wasn't particularly great at school. K through 12. But I think that's because it took me a while to figure out what I was good at, right? And maybe I just wasn't great at learning in that kind of more structured environment. And then I got to college, and a couple years into college, I was like, oh, I do better in small groups, I do better at projects, et cetera. So, you know, it took some time. And then once I got into the professional world, I heeded the advice of an advisor I had in college that said that not only will you change your job multiple times over your life, you will change your career multiple times over your life. And I think that's a really important piece of advice for people to hear, especially when they're starting out, because you have this idea that the job you get straight out of college is like the job, and that's just not the case, and that you can change careers and you can pivot professionally and personally, and that's okay. And I've just always heard that in the back of my mind.
Say that not only in your career, I mean, I don't feel like I'm the same person as I was when I was 20. I mean, I think you have some of the core ethos, right? Some of the same thread that goes through your life, but man, we change a lot.
Oh, 100%. When I think back to who I was at 22 years old, you know, all full of self-righteousness and you know everything about the world and I'm going to go out there and change everything and march on Washington. That's a great thing to do and have that sense of things, but that's, you're just not the same person, right? And so I just turned 39 and I might have some of the same core values as I did at 22, but I'm just not the same person. It's just not, you know, you change, you evolve, and you have to be okay with that. You got to, you know, if you don't embrace change, if you don't embrace the evolution of who you are as a human being and your personality and what you enjoy, then you're just going to get stuck looking backwards. And, you know, I have just
moments of big change in your life, right? I mean, you are now, you know, running an ad agency outside of Boston, but prior to that, you were working in nonprofit. Is that correct?
Yep. Yes, absolutely. So I started my career working in nonprofit, paying my dues, working low level. And then I moved up the ranks, going into, you know, major gifts, fundraising, event planning, marketing, sales, et cetera, to help fund the nonprofits. But really, you know, working your way up that ladder and learning as you go, learning in the environment. And at a certain point, I was working at a grassroots nonprofit in Jamaica Plain, which is a small neighborhood in Boston. And I just hit this wall of, you know, this is as far as I'm going to get at this point in this career. And I can either stay in nonprofits and do this and make this amount of money for the rest of my career. I could move to a larger nonprofit and maybe like make a little bit more money, but have different sets of problems because it's a larger nonprofit. Or I can switch to corporate. And I had to have an internal conversation with myself around, you know, are you ethically okay moving from nonprofit to corporate? And I just made the decision that I can contribute to society and give back and help sustain businesses and improve communities in other ways besides working for nonprofits. And I can do it when I'm making more money. Because as a woman, you know, we need to be thinking about how much money we're making, especially when we're not talking about that a lot. So I think it's an important thing, you know, in the evolution of a female executive to be conscientious of, you know, am I getting paid what I'm worth? And it's okay to move because you want to make more money. So, you know, I've moved into...
No, I think that's really interesting because I heard Tony Robbins talk about that once at one of his conferences that early on his career, right, he wanted to give back so much that he wasn't really charging a lot of money. And he was invited by someone that he knew professionally who was a billionaire and had a private plane, and he was totally out of his league. And this gentleman said to him, you know, Tony, you can do a lot more good in this world with more resources than you can with less. And he talks about how that same mindset shift that you had was one that really changed the trajectory of his life, because he became to make peace with money and realize that, you know, wealth can really bring good if you use it and direct it in the right way.
100%. And I try to have a conversation with the women that work for me as well. You know, I think I take my responsibility as a young female executive very seriously, especially when I have conversations with the young women that work with me, work for me. I think it's really important to have the conversations around money, to have transparency around money in business, and to, you know, try to lose the emotional feelings around money so that we can have really open, honest conversations, both internally in a company and externally with a client. I think you can have a better conversation about money that way. And that's something I had to learn over time. I think that's an important skill for a leader to have.
What do you attribute your ability to sort of take that mindset and apply it to your own life and give yourself permission that making money and being successful was not inherently going against your core values of contribution and service to the world?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of that is what you were saying earlier about that I'm, you know, this determined type A go-getter. I always am looking for the next thing to do. I'm always looking for a challenge, whether it's professionally or personally. And it's, you know, the next logical step for me was to move into corporate from nonprofit. And I just had to have a conversation with myself about that this is okay, right? Like, nobody else can make it okay. You have to make it okay for yourself. And I had to be, you know, emotionally, logically okay with it. I'm somebody who's very logic driven, not emotion driven. So as long as I can have kind of a logical conversation, whether it's with myself or other people, then I feel okay about things. But it takes time, and you have to give yourself the grace to, you know, get through the conversation with yourself around it.
I'm always looking for the next challenge was a very interesting thing that I heard you say, because I think that summarizes with great simplicity that question I was asking myself in the last week, which is, why do some people perceivably have hiccup after hiccup expose itself in their life? And why does it feel, you know, that some, whether many, many, many storms a season versus just a couple in a lifetime? And maybe that really is it. Folks who are really resilient and are maybe type A or very goal-minded are always thinking that they can overcome anything that's put in front of them. So inevitably, more things come because the weather, life, our experiences are always cyclical, and it will always be a revolving door. I don't know. What do you think is attributed to some people perceivably having more challenges than others?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think that there's some big master plan.
That's a different podcast.
I think some of it is, you know, luck or lack of luck. I think it's some of it's perception. Do you perceive things to be a challenge or not? How do you take things on? I have had some not great health luck, but you know, you got to take it in stride. You can only do so much, and you can take a certain amount of control. So you have to take the control you can take. But like you said, some people have more challenges than others. And, you know, up until I was diagnosed with cancer, my feeling was if I can do things, then anybody else can do it. Cause I don't actually see myself as doing anything that is so outside the box of what anybody else can achieve. I've had people tell me I'm an inspiration and, you know, I'm a mentor and all of these things. And I want to help and I want to contribute. And I'm sure that goes back to my nonprofit roots. And if I can, you know, inspire people, that's wonderful, but I don't actually think anything I'm doing is anything that, you know, outside the box of what anybody else can do, because I'm not some incredible athlete. I'm not some incredible public speaker. I'm not some, you know, world-renowned Fortune 500 corporate leader. I'm just, you know, a 39-year-old from outside Boston. But I think the best thing we can do is try to learn from each other. And, you know, to speak to your question about why some people have more challenges than others, I think some of it's a roll of the dice. Some of it is how much you focus on it. And some of it is, you know, if you go after challenges like I do, whether it's professionally or physically, then you're probably going to find more challenges. So,
Beautiful. And you and I are very aligned with this experience, right? Both of us have been leaders in companies, or both of us are leaders in companies. Both of mm-hmm. us tried to push our bodies against the odds. And mm-hmm. lastly, both of us have had diagnoses where we didn't really love the identity or the definition we were given by the medical mm-hmm. professionals. And I think with all of those things, both of us have talked about how we felt like there's only really one answer, right? You're given these challenges, you overcome them, full stop. There's no other option. And yet we both hear that, you know, I hear that I'm inspiring. You hear that you're inspiring. And for both of us, we kind of scratch our heads and say, well, it's just what you do. I mean, right. it's the obvious answer. So why do you think some people who do get to speak about their experiences and help others have a hard time grappling with that identity that they're quote unquote inspiring?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think about that often. I don't know. I don't know why people like me, like you, have a hard time understanding how they're inspiring. Maybe it's because I don't know how to be any other way. I'm just me, right? And that's what I used to say to people, right? Yeah. This is it. This is how I was born. This is my DNA. Like, I have some, you know, mutated DNA that caused me to get cancer. I have some really bad luck with health, but I also am really outspoken and determined and, you know, go-getter and transparent in my communication, and I don't take things personally and have a really thick skin. So, you know, there's really great things about it and there's really not great things about being me, and you kind of got to take what you can get with that. And I think you could have, you know, I have a number of chronic medical conditions, and I have thyroid cancer, like you mentioned earlier, and you could be somebody with all of those medical conditions and get really stuck in the woe unto me, but also just stuck into the pain and the day-to-day struggle. And I'm not trying to, you know, understate that. It's hard. It's not, you know, and I'm sure it's hard for you too. It is, but you know, and you got to give yourself the space to have those emotions. But then for me, if I personally get stuck too long in those emotions, I'm going to lose myself. And I just have to move on, because I can't define myself by cancer and medical conditions. I define myself, you know, as a young executive, as a leader. I have a lot of strong feelings and thoughts about people management and the right way to manage people that helps both you and them and the company. I have a lot of feelings and thoughts about management consulting and marketing and, you know, business in general. I have a lot of love for endurance athleticism and for my family and all those things. And so it's just, you know, for me, the medical challenges are a part of me, and they shape it. They shape the challenges I go through on a day-to-day basis. And they, you know, create a veil at which I look through, you know, everything I do. Running is harder. Everything is harder with cancer and with medical challenges, but they can't be everything about me at all times.
One of the things that you told me at our prep call, and I won't even give it a definition because we don't go there, that I thought was so beautiful. And I loved this. If you're currently facing a medical issue in your life, I mean, I loved Julia's approach on this. So years ago, she was told that she had a very rare condition that possibly could have negative outcomes. But in her getting this diagnosis, she did not even allow them to write it down in her medical record because she doesn't want the record there. And I thought that was really beautiful to get this idea. And it's the same thing I did when I was told I had muscular dystrophy in my, when I was 19, and they told me I could potentially like lose the ability to walk. I mean, I had a really set of choice words, not for streaming radio. That idea and put it, I said, no, that's a hard no, that's not going to happen. And that was an identity that I just did not want to wrap my head around or accept. So let's talk a little bit about how, as a patient, you can be proactive about your health, not in denial, not, you know, head in your stand, blah, 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 pretending it doesn't exist, but how sometimes rejecting other people's kind of definition of who you are and what you're going to become can be very helpful in a healing journey.
100%. I really agree with you. I mean, just to play off of what you said, a number of years ago, about 6 years ago, I was, you know, I found myself in the ICU in Boston and I didn't really know what was wrong. And, you know, fast forward, it turned out I had to have emergency surgery and it saved my life. And then later we found out that I had this rare genetic disorder. And the diagnosis for somebody with that disorder is usually given when they're very young and they are found to, you know, they're told that they probably won't live past their 20s, which is ridiculous because I'm 39 and I'm, you know, fine. But, and I say I'm fine because I don't know any other way to be, right? Like I said earlier, I just don't have any other concept of life. So I just don't accept the diagnosis. I'm like, yes, that's me. And I have to deal with certain things about it, but I don't accept the, you know, well, you have to be careful in every moment of every day, which is just crazy. Because if you live your life in fear, then you're not going to have a life. Because what's the point? So after I went through surgery about 6 years ago, and, you know, I recovered, and then I kind of realized how sick I had been for so long. You don't really realize how sick you are until you recover. And that's when I wanted to regain some control of my life. And that's how I became athletic and started running.
This is just so beautiful because I think a lot of times, you know, people get bad news. They find out something negative about a job or their family or their finances or their relationship or their medical condition, and they want to shut down and hide and stay stagnant and feel fear. And I mean, you did the polar opposite. You got this diagnosis and you said, I'm going to become an endurance athlete. I don't run at all, but I'm going to start doing that. So tell us a little bit about this journey. I find this so inspiring that you get this terrible, you're out of the ICU. You have this, like, you know, near death experience. And then you're like, you know what? I'm just not going to be a 5K, you know, couch. I'm going to go like run for many, many hours or do 24 hour race. Tell me more.
Well, so initially it definitely was couch to 5K, because if you're somebody who has really never worked out or done anything athletic in your entire life, trying to run a mile is, you know, incredibly difficult and hard. And anybody listening that, you know, started running in their adult life, I'm sure is nodding along, because that first quarter mile, you're just really questioning all your life choices. Because it's so difficult. And it really, I mean, this is where the determination really comes into play, because it took me a year from when I started running to be able to run a 5K, which is 3.1 miles. So that's
stop there for a minute, because that's incredible. I mean, I think a lot of times people give up not because they can't do it, right? They give up because they're not patient in the process getting there.
Right. And I'm definitely guilty of that. I struggle with patience. I'm sure a lot of executives struggle with patience. I just had a conversation today about my health where I was just like, why am I not healing faster? So I, you know, patience is just incredibly difficult in general. But for me, being determined, once I set my mind to something, that's it. Like that's the end of the story for me. So I was going to run a 5K. So that is the end of it. But it's not like I went from the couch to running a 50K, which is about 32 miles. I spent a couple of years just running some very short distances, which is, you know, and I say just, I mean, running some short distances, there's nothing wrong with running short distances. And just getting healthy generally, because as anybody that has suffered from life-altering illnesses and chronic illnesses can attest to, if you lose your health or you don't have your health, having a sense of health and well-being in your body is the most important thing. And you can, you know, you feel like you can take on the world if you feel healthy. So I just was really focused on that. And then because I'm somebody who's so focused on the next challenge, I went from okay, well, I'm going to take some boot camps and some bar classes and some kind of structured classes and run some 5Ks too. I'm going to run Spartan races, which are obstacle races too. I'm going to run multiple Spartan races in a year too. I'm going to run an ultra, which is a 50K with, you know, 15,000 feet of elevation and 65 plus 70 obstacles, and just be out on a mountain for 14 plus hours and in the dark and, you know, 32 degree weather, which was last year.
You did that last year.
Yes. So last year I ran, I basically spent every waking hour except for working running. I was one of those t-shirts that says, I'm sorry, I can't, I'm running that day, because all I did last year was train with running and strength, because I was determined to do these two ultra races. And so at the beginning of the year in April, I did the Spartan Ultra Tri-State New Jersey race, and I was second to last that came in, but I finished, which definitely is a case of determination. My husband often says to me that if he had been in my shoes, he would have never finished, and he's a much stronger runner than I am, just because of how long I was out there and how close I was to not finishing. So, you know, to tie it back to business, the determination to try to complete something, it just was never a thought in my mind to not finish. There's never a thought in my mind to not finish the race. It's never a thought in my mind to not complete, you know, a project. So until somebody pulls me off a course and I don't hit a cutoff, that's, you know, I'm not going to quit, because once I set my mind to something, that's it. I had decided to run this race, and so I was going to do it all the way to the end, see it all the way through. And just like with business, trying to move from nonprofit to corporate, I had decided I was going to do it. So that was the end of it. That was the decision that I made, and nothing was going to stop me. And once I moved into corporate, I realized I was a terrible employee and a much better leader. And so I was going to move into leadership.
I think there's something really interesting about that, because I have that same level of determination. Like when I want to do something, I usually make it happen. But there's been times in my life, and I think certainly with health or fitness, I think because I do have some physical limitations or challenges, that it's harder for me to push through that. And I think the place that gets me stuck the most is that uncomfort and that pain. You know, I am also impatient by nature. I also like to make things smooth and make things easy and make things fast. What was really resonant for me in watching these documentaries that you inspired me to watch this week about all these crazy endurance athletes, specifically these folks that go out on the Iditarod Trail in Alaska for 1,000 miles and snow bike it. I mean, this is not a joke. This actually happens. Sleep in 50 degree below zero weather on the snow trail in a sleeping bag surrounded by wolves. Like, I don't even get it. But it made what they said, and the Iron Cowboy who did 50 Ironman triathlons in 50 days, another mind-blowing documentary, is this idea that pain is part of the process. And what all of these endurance athletes do, which is probably the mindset shift that a lot of us type A goal-oriented people need to switch to, is it is okay to have pain. I'm always sure I can get to great outcomes, but I sometimes, you know, my mind and my ego get upset that it's rocky. I always know I'm going to get to the other side and be fine, but I kind of fight the turbulence a little bit. And I'm like, oh, not this again. Why does this always have to be challenging? And the beautiful thing that I learned from endurance athletes is they're like, yeah, I know that the weather's good right now, but bad is coming. So I'm just ready for it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, in our business, I run a small marketing agency, like you said, outside of Boston. And so for a small business, any business that's, you know, small, you're going to have turbulence and you're going to have difficulty. And the way I, you know, lead my staff is there's a lot of, you know, getting them to get to their own answers and getting them to figure things out for themselves. I think, you know, people do best when they solve their own problems. You're there to support them, but people should really solve their own problems. But that's just like in endurance events, you need to solve your own problems because you're going to have difficulties and you're going to have good times and you should enjoy the good times, but you should prepare for the bad times. And, you know, one of the big things we talk about at Vision Advertising is you need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that is incredibly true in running, in athleticism, and in business. And, you know, when we train staff to work for me, we talk about that very specifically.
And I think that that's that moment in time, right? I think that it's so easy that when the uncomfort comes up,
yes,
you get frustrated that it's there.
Yes.
But true performers and the people who you think, wow, they've achieved so much and they've gotten these, the uncomfort comes up for them all the time. Yet yes, they don't get emotionally invested in it. They just
correct
deal with it and move on. And it's right, such a great lesson for all of us to remind ourselves. I mean, if you do need an inspiration, I thought that the what is it? The cowboy. What are the names of the two documentaries that I just saw?
So one of them was, what was it? Something to Nome.
Safety to Nome, and then to Rome, and then the next Iron Cowboy.
Iron Cowboy. Yes. Yes. So I think, you know, in ultra racing, we talk about the pain cave. And so, you know, you got to get into the pain cave. It's going to come. You can't have, I've never had an ultra race without a pain cave. It happens in training. It happens in the races. It's there. You know, it's coming. It's, you know, you're going to get into your own head. You're out there by yourself. Things hurt. Your body's falling apart. Your knees hurt. You're questioning all your bad life choices. You don't have the right fuel. You forgot to eat. You're nauseous. It's, you know, cold or hot or something. And you, it's there. It's always coming. You know, the pain cave is coming. So it's just, how do you prepare yourself for it? Have you mentally trained yourself for it? Are you in a good headspace to deal with it? Or are you in a bad headspace to deal with it? And I think, you know, it's knowing the reality. It's being a realist rather than a pessimist or an optimist. It's knowing that that pain cave is there, and it's not reality. It's just the current reality. It's not the end all be all reality. It's, you know, my body is going to hurt. It just is. I have skeletal issues. I have all kinds of chronic problems. Right now, running with cancer is like running with a weight vest on. But, you know, it's still better than not running. It's still better. Being in the pain cave is still better than not finishing the race. And I think part of this, you know, transitioning.
Actually, I love that line.
Yeah.
Being in the pain cave is still better than not finishing the race.
Exactly.
I think that's the thing, right?
Right, right. That could be true in, you know, pivoting your business. That could be true in athleticism and your personal life and how you deal with a chronic illness. There's just going to be pain, right? That's just like, I think all of these things, the reality for me, at least how I think about it, is the reality is it's not going to be sunshine, butterflies, and unicorns all the time. It's just not the reality of life. But that doesn't mean that you have to be stuck in this dark place 24/7. It's just understanding, like, here's the reality, and sometimes it's difficult, and you can acknowledge that and be frustrated and have all your feelings about it. But then how do you move on from it?
Do you
make the best of the situation?
Do you feel like when you get through a pain cave or when you conquer a really challenging moment, do you think on the out, when you get to the other side, life is almost a step higher or feels a little bit better because you've lived through that extreme?
Yes. Yes. 100%. It's, you know, part of it is perspective. You know, if I've done that, I can do anything. So much so that, like, using the example of that race I did with the 15,000 feet of elevation in New Jersey, I had the elevation profile of that race tattooed on my arm so that I could look down and see it at any time. It's like right on my forearm. So if you ever see photos of me, you can see it. It's big and bold, just like me. And I can look down and look at it and be like, nothing will ever be harder than that race, because that race physically hurt. And even just going through cancer treatment, I can look down and look at this tattoo and be like, you came out the other side of this race. And it was the hardest thing I had ever gone through.
Still harder than cancer?
I don't know if it's harder than cancer, but it definitely helps me to get perspective with cancer. Because it's, you know, cancer is only part of me. It's not all of me. And so this race is, that race was part of me, not all of me. I'm still me on the other side of that race, even if I fail. And I'm still me on the other side of cancer, you know, even if the next round of scans show I still have cancer. So it's not fully defining. You still are you at your core. But I think overcoming a huge challenge helps to give you the perspective that you can, you know, you have the ability to conquer it. You have the ability to change and move your life. And it's not that you're kind of stuck in this whirlwind of chaos, which can definitely feel like, and that you're kind of at this whim of challenges and difficulties. You can shift and move the boat if, you know, you lean hard enough.
That's beautiful. What was one of those moments for people that haven't been an endurance athlete like myself?
Yeah.
Outside of my pain, although I do use my Peloton and sometimes want to die in my basement, but
there you go.
When you're, tell us a moment on that trail for people that haven't lived, like running a mountain, a 50K, which to me is just mind blowing. Give us like a description of that most intense moment on that path and how you talked yourself through it.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. So I think I was in that race. I must have been like 20 something miles in. My racing partner was 20 minutes ahead of me. We had separated purposefully because she was kind of trucking at a faster rate, which is fine. And I wasn't fueling really well. You got to put yourself on a schedule of how often you eat and what you eat. You have to, you know, liken lots of things. You have to have a system for things because you kind of can't think really well when you've been out there for that many hours. So you have to kind of stick to your fueling schedule. And I was a number of hours into this race and a number of miles in, and I had not done a great job fueling. And I was having a lot of ankle and knee pain, and I was going straight uphill, chatting with some people that I was pacing with. And I just remember thinking, I am going to get stuck out here in the forest and nobody's going to find me because it is about to get dark. And my watch has died. I don't know what time it is. I don't know how far I've gone. I don't know how far it is to the next checkpoint. And I really hope that I end up with some kind of buddy for the next number of miles of this race, because I really don't want to be by myself in the forest in the dark with no watch and just a headlamp. And what ended up happening was that kind of all of those things came true. I ended up by myself in the forest in the pitch black with just a headlamp, with no watch, no sense of time, no sense of how long I've been out there. You're chasing cutoffs, which, because for these races you have to finish by a certain time, you can't just stay out there for forever. So, but you can't, you know, run through the forest in the pitch black, because you could trip, you could fall, you could get hurt. You don't want to go off course. You're trying to follow these little tags in the forest. And you just start seeing things. You start hallucinating. You really can get up in your own head about everything. And it's, you know, how do you stay focused and singularly driven forward towards that finish line? And I think one of the things I really love about the sport is the simplicity of it, that it really is just putting one foot in front of the other. And it really is just trying to get to that finish line. And it really is just, okay, what time is it? Do I need to eat? There is no cell phone service. There's no who needs me to answer an email. There's no, you know, what client needs my help. It's really very simple. And it's, how hard can my body work in this moment to achieve this goal? And it helps to really, for me, it definitely helps to clear my mind. Even in the pain cave, even when things feel so difficult.
I'm definitely going to text you next time I'm in the pain cave.
I love it. This is amazing.
So, I mean, a lot of people could say that, you know, this entire last 6 month period has sort of felt like a pain cave. I mean, we've experienced financial losses, job losses, educational setbacks, medical challenges. People have lost family. People have felt cut off, lonely, isolated. So through all of this time period, not only were you leading a team through the work from home edict in Massachusetts, leading clients who, you know, a lot of your companies are in the food and beverage industry, so they were taking like really massive hits, but you had this need to be diagnosed with cancer the week of the shutdown. And talk us to us a little bit about how you had to manage through, you know, getting a diagnosis at the time of COVID when there wasn't even medical appointments to be had.
Yeah, absolutely. So this goes back to a question you asked me a while ago about just like advocating for yourself and your own health. I had a routine physical exam with my primary care physician in the first week of March, like everyone should. And I am definitely guilty of not always having my annual physical. And I almost actually canceled this one because I was so busy at work. My physician found a lump on my thyroid and sent me for an ultrasound. And that came back concerning. I'm putting air quotes around concerning. And then she sent me for a biopsy, except that between the time that she sent me for the ultrasound and we got the results and the time that she sent me for the biopsy, the whole state shut down. And so I wasn't actually able to even schedule the biopsy. And so here I am sitting at my desk in my home office. We're normally a company that has a real full functioning office. We're not work from home. We have an East Coast office and a West Coast office. And while we offer flexible schedules, we do really have in-person offices. So, you know, I had transitioned the staff to being work from home, what we thought was going to be a short amount of temporary, which has obviously turned into much longer, trying to support our clients through an incredibly tumultuous financial period, because like you said, just under half of our clients are in the hospitality industry and everything in Massachusetts is shutting down. And trying to guide my team through supporting their clients and trying to ensure the financial future of the company through all of this. You know, my goal was always to make sure that the staff doesn't get furloughed or laid off. And, you know, feeling the full weight of the financial future of an entire company and staff on my shoulders, while at the same time, you know, nonstop calling my doctor's office, trying to schedule a biopsy and not being able to do so because the state had shut certain things down. My doctor's office was a part of a hospital system that got particularly hit hard by COVID. We as a state was hit very hard by COVID. And so I just, you know, I don't tend to be emotional. I'm not a crier. I'm not, like I said earlier, I'm an incredibly logical person, but I just hit this point one day where I was like, I have been calling my doctor's office nonstop. I get one call back for every five calls I place. And I don't blame them. They're going through unprecedented times. But I just don't know what to do at this point, you know, in addition to trying to run a company and be, you know, positive and understanding for staff and clients and work 60 plus hours a week from my home office, which, you know, I'm not at all used to doing. So I am very privileged to have a cousin that is an oncologist in Colorado. And I had long conversations with him because, you know, to speak to your point about advocating for yourself, I just wasn't going to wait for somebody to call me. Because what they kept saying to me when I would call is, we'll call you to schedule it. We're not scheduling anything yet. And I just knew deep in my gut, it's one of those like internal feelings that you have to listen to. I knew that this was not something that could wait. And even if it was benign and even if I was okay, just for my emotional well-being to be able to lead the company through this difficult time, I could not be distracted by something that could be nothing. So I needed to know what was going on. And I also knew that if I had the resources, I could solve this problem. I just needed to know what to do. So I got on the phone with my cousin, and I was actually generally upset just because of the frustration of not knowing, you know, the next step. I just felt like I was being blocked at every advance. And so he really generously walked me through everything about, you know, the possibilities of the disease. He looked at all my test results that I already had from the ultrasound, and he helped me figure out what kind of doctor I needed to find, move to a different hospital system, explain what's happening with hospital systems during the COVID crisis, you know, things you just don't know unless you work in healthcare. And so he really helped me figure that out. And this is, you know, part of this is, you know, figuring out the resources you have at your disposal and learning when to ask for help, which I think as an executive or just a woman, you have to know when to ask for help, because we're so often taught never to ask for help. We can do everything ourselves. And it's just not the case. As a human being, you can't do everything yourself. And it's not just delegating. It's just generally like, I'm going to wave my hand in the air and say, I don't know everything right now.
I think you did the important thing, though, that slips people up a lot. And maybe this even over-indexes for women. You had that feeling. You know, you had that feeling in your gut that was like, this cannot wait. And a lot of people will push that off because they feel, I don't want to be annoying, or I don't want to be pushy, or they've already said no. But there are times in life where we are hardwired as humans, and we need to follow that gut instinct, because when that gut is telling you, don't give up, it means that it's right.
Correct. I really agree with that. I think, you know, we are, you know, conditioned and socialized to push down the gut feelings, and it is just not a good thing to do. I think as leaders, many times we're more successful because we listen to our gut feelings and we've learned to trust our instincts. And you can't just leave those instincts in business. They need to enter into different parts of your life. When you're advocating for your own health, which, you know, is so essential in all parts of your life, but these days can be more challenging because of the difficult health system we're in. You just need to understand that, you know, the healthcare system is really strained right now, but that doesn't mean that you're not a priority. And there's just a different way to go about things. You just, you know.
How did you change that then? So your cousin gives you this assistance, and then how did you get the appointment?
So I found out, you know, I didn't even know what a thyroid did, to be completely honest with you. I didn't even understand what it did. And I really was not freaking out about having cancer. I didn't think I had cancer because they had run blood tests and everything came back perfectly. I felt perfect. I felt great. I was running a lot of miles. I was working out a lot. I felt fantastic, actually. So I just figured it was a benign lump in my thyroid that would just be annoying. But I just wanted to know. So my cousin explained that I needed an endocrinologist, which I had never heard of. So I had conversations with the other, you know, people in my network, primarily women executives that I trust that are local. And that's something I've built up over a number of years. I'm one of the founders of the Metro West Women's Network. And so I have really cultivated a group of female executives in this area that I trust to give me really good advice, whether it's referring me over to a doctor or just, you know, helping me figure out what to do about a personnel issue. And so an amazing woman that I've become friendly with through that, she referred me to an endocrinologist in a different hospital system, which was literally one town over. So I am in Marlboro, and this is one town over in Sudbury. So it's just, you know, it's a geographical thing. I didn't know who to go to. So she referred me over there. I called, I made a telehealth appointment, which I had never done before, but they were able to get me in the same week, which is fantastic. I sent all my records over, which was a whole thing to figure out, but you know, you just got to manage it. I get on this telehealth appointment with the endocrinologist, and she looks everything over, and she, you know, I'm video chatting with her, and she's looking at my thyroid, and I can't do a physical exam in the same way, but she can see from the video what the lump looks like. And, she says, same thing that my cousin said, that it's a 98% chance that it was benign, but that we should get it checked out. So again, I'm not freaking out. I'm not worrying. It's just, let's get it checked out. So she ordered a biopsy the next week, which was the only part about that that was concerning, was that, you know, now you're going into a hospital during the time of COVID when everybody had been staying at home for so long. So that was scary, but I went and got the biopsy done, and she calls me the next day after 5 p.m., which is always a really bad sign with doctors. And she says, you know, she was wrong and that unfortunately it's malignant. And, you know, she then says to me, well, do you need some time to process or be upset? And I was just like, no, I don't. I need information. I need to know what the next step is. I need to know the plan. I don't need to cry. I just need you to tell me what's happening. I'm very, you know, process based. Very
information. You said that like an endurance athlete who was
correct
to enter the pain cave, and like you just got
horrible
conditions and just started to sleet and ice, and you're like, okay, I need to know my next step to get through the storm.
Correct. So then she explained that the way that you manage thyroid cancer is the first step is surgery. They removed the entire thyroid. I had a 3-centimeter tumor on the left side of my thyroid. Scans and tests showed that it also had spread to the right side of my thyroid. So they needed to remove the entire thyroid. For those that don't know, the thyroid controls basically everything in your body. It's like the central, you know, control center. So it muscles, body temperature, metabolism, sleep cycles, everything. Right? It's this butterfly-shaped gland where your Adam's apple would be. And I just didn't know anything about it, and I didn't understand any of those things, but I knew that I needed to get better. So, you know, she referred me over to a surgeon, a thyroid surgeon, who is fantastic. So I had a number of telehealth appointments with him, and he walked me through the whole process. And then when I got to the point where I was like, okay, great, let's schedule this surgery, the problem then was that Massachusetts wasn't even open to surgeries. So it's just like every step of the way, I found another hurdle. And it just, you know, I feel like that's the theme of 2020. It was just like nonstop hurdles. So, you know, now I'm sitting here knowing I have cancer, knowing I need to have my thyroid removed, but I can't even schedule the surgery because our governor has shut down all surgeries except for anything COVID related or trauma related. So then it's the decision of, do you chance getting COVID by going on a plane and going to somewhere like Colorado where my cousin could organize the surgery for me, but then you're very high risk getting on a plane? Or do you wait it out and see what happens in Massachusetts? So that was challenging. It ended up that Massachusetts opened up a couple of weeks later. So I had surgery here. In surgery, they found that the cancer had spread from my thyroid to the surrounding lymph nodes. And so I had some lymph nodes removed as well. And then they did testing on the cancer after it was removed. At pathology, and they found that it was BRAF positive, which is like a genetic mutation that you have from breast cancer. And so, because it was more aggressive, I had to go through radiation.
2 minutes left, and I want to make sure people know.
Oh yeah,
great today, and I want to give them a chance to connect with you. So the good thing is you're back to running. You've gone.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're going to wait and see. And we all know that you are going to continue to. You're going to get to that no evidence of disease for your 5 years, and who knows what mountain you're going to climb next.
Yes. I'm currently still in treatment, but the plan is obviously to get me to no evidence of disease, and I'm still, running and doing everything. So,
okay. 60 seconds. How do people get in touch with you?
I'm very active on Instagram. My personal account is at Julia Rivka, JULIARIVKA, or you can find our corporate account at Vision Advertising Rocks, because we do. And we do something called.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time today. I could talk to you for another hour, but we're out of time.
And I know.
The next time you feel like you're stuck, just remember, you just got to walk through the pain cave. It's an inevitable part of your existence, and it will get you to your next destination. Thank you, Julia Becker Collins. It was a pleasure, and have a great afternoon, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.